body power. As much a part of Irish football as spending a 9-month loan spell at Preston North End.
Nevin, come on in. Hello.
How are you doing? You're well?
All well. Happy Christmas.
Can you say it this early? Well, yeah. Happy festive period. I think we can say that much.
You're kidding.
And it's been relatively happy so far. In fact,
when can I start saying it to you? The 25th? 3 p.m. on the 25th? After the Queen's speech? I mean, when does it actually start?
Having never watched it, I wouldn't have a clue.
Have you never watched the Queen's speech?
No, I've never seen it. I've always said other things to do. Jeremy Corbyn got in trouble with that, didn't he, in the election over here, for saying that he'd watched it, and he obviously clearly hadn't. But I've got food to eat and that sort of time. Usually when you're playing football, to be fair, the entire amount of your career, you train in Christmas morning, and then you go to a hotel. You're travelling at that point in time anyway, and you never actually get to see much until that evening. So, no, it's not something that I grew up with.
So in the 20-odd years since, even idle curiosity has never led you to say, I wonder what the Queen is saying. That's fair enough.
Okay. They give you the headlines at night, don't worry.
Yeah, they do. So, look, we've loads to talk about because there's so much going on. Even since we last spoke, Carlo Ancelotti is suddenly the Everton manager. We never got any Duncan Ferguson stories out of you, even though we promised we would do so. Mikel Arteta is the manager. And then over the weekend, obviously, lots has gone on. Man City beat Leicester, reinforcing what we all know deep down, that they're probably the best bet, Man City, that is, to catch Liverpool. And it's not a very good bet at all. Liverpool play Leicester on the 26th. We're starting, though, obviously, with events at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium yesterday. Racism rearing its ugly head again. It overshadowed the Manchester derby. And it seems to have caught the attention of a wider scope people this time around. Today, Downing Street very much involved. Boris Johnson's spokesperson made comments. The behaviour was described as vile. The PFA has called for a government inquiry. I'm not sure what the scope or the value or what they're hoping to achieve with that inquiry necessarily, but they've called for one nonetheless. The sports minister, Nigel Adams, has been speaking to Spurs this afternoon. If people didn't see this, I don't know, did you watch this? Did you watch this game live, Pat?
Yes, I did. Okay. I did watch it, yeah.
Were you at the ground or at home?
No, I was at the home because I'd been at Newcastle the day before, doing the Newcastle game against Crystal Palace, which was among the most boring games I'd ever been to. Yeah. But that was the game to be at. So I wanted to watch it, obviously, because it was an interesting stuff. I mean, all the stories surrounding it beforehand, like Jose and how he was tactically going to set up. They were big favourites. You know, and I suppose none of us had really thought about it. And Tottenham, to be fair, got into the racist thing immediately. Mm. It's just not, for some reason, it's not the first club you expect it to be, to come from. In fact, it's one of the last clubs you expect it to come from. And I think it kind of behoves us all well to make sure that we don't start casting aspersions to anyone else, because it can happen anywhere. It can happen at any club. Be it City, be it Chelsea before that, be it, you know, whatever has happened at the Liverpool clubs as well. It just happens you have a small minority that are perfectly capable of doing that sort of thing or saying that sort of thing. I think we still have to say allegedly at the moment because it's not be like, you know, catch whoever did it or supposedly did it at Spurs. But, you know, I can't see any reason why Antonio Rudiger would make that up. And it's just calling it out. And it's great that it's been called out. And the only positive I can see from it at the moment is it was the lead story in the news in the BBC last night. And I'm thinking, yeah, think about 20 years ago, if somebody did something like that, it would have been buried or even not commented on. It's the lead story in the news. It might have only been one person. So it's been taken seriously in the media. Great. Delighted with that. But I would underline it's also been taken seriously in the clubs. And it always has been used. And even more so now. Working within one or two clubs and working with other clubs, they've all got things in place. They try everything they can, be it announcements before the game, there's stuff in the programmes, there's stuff on the websites, they've got players themselves getting involved in it, they've all got various campaigns within the clubs that they try and work within the community, be it anti-racism, sexism, anti-Semitism, you name it, they're all doing it. So to turn around and say, right, football is the problem, I just can't see it. society's got a problem. Mm. Society's got a big problem. And it kind of rears its ugly head, and it's very noticeable when it happens in football. It's much, much worse over in the continent, where you get hundreds of people sometimes singing and shouting and saying these things, and we will never accept even one person doing it here. But what more can the clubs do other than try and find them, root them out, ban them for life, and then throw them towards the courts? If there's anything else we can do, and I can only see you thinking the one thing you can do, which is walk off the field. Mm-hmm. My argument being, I won't argue against you if you walk off. I have every respect for you if you walk off. But who suffers? Who suffers in that situation? And I'm worried in case all the wrong people suffer then.
Yeah, that's an interesting point even to debate. Mm-hmm. So you talked there about hundreds singing, in which case you'd have certainly less of a problem with anybody walking off. Well, you wouldn't have a problem with anybody walking off full stop. I mean, if Antonio Rudiger said, this is absolutely abhorrent, I'm done, his teammates would support him, and I think everybody would applaud him off. There is that nagging voice at the back of your head that says, well, you're empowering one racist nutjob in the crowd to spoil an international event, effectively. And there will always be one nutjob in the crowd, unfortunately. So how you handle that individual case, I don't know. That is a trickier one to sort out than the hundreds who are chanting.
That's why I'm really uncomfortable about it. And I hope people, you know, I've talked about it quite a lot recently. Historically, I remember how much we suffered in the past for the lunatic fringe. And there was a bigger lunatic fringe that had taken part in the game, and we got banned from Europe and all that sort of stuff. And everybody that suffered from it, including the players, the black and the white players, including all the fans, including all the good people that were involved in it. And these people were winning. And when you do that sort of thing with one idiot, you're going to get people with some mental problems start using this sort of thing. You're going to get people who have got, you know, pseudo political ideologies that start going that to get their own personal opinions, you know, put on a massive, you know, media template, which they shouldn't be allowed to do. If they find that every time they do something like this, people walk off and they get this massive amount of media attention that they absolutely do not deserve. Yeah. So I have a real problem with that. But as I say, could I say, no, don't walk off? No. I mean, I remember through my entire career getting called all sorts of things. I remember, you know, religious things being shouted at me. You know, I get called everything from a Tim to, I would not use the Y word, but because I've got a big nose, being Jewish, I'm not, being gay, being a manky Scotch get. I mean, you name it, man, I got everything. Mm. I didn't want to walk off because I didn't want to impair these gits, and I just kind of looked down at them. And let's say someone like John Barnes, he will say the same argument towards people, you know, the odd racist comment that he goes, he just looks down on them completely. So that's kind of my stance on it, but I have no right to have that complete stance on it because I haven't had centuries worth of racism aimed at me and my people, you know. So yes. That's why I stand back and always say, you have got the right to do that, and we will back you if you walk off. I just don't know long term. And maybe I'm wrong. It may well be. I mean, Colin Kaepernick over in the US, he did. He took the knee. He suffered from it, but it's heightened the debate and it's brought it on. And it may well be that it wouldn't have the right answer, but it would heighten the debate further. I think the debate's quite high. And I also think the debate is not a binary one. It's something that society is going to attack. And I just love the idea that I had a great argument. I was talking to someone today about it, a young female black activist. She was brilliant. She was absolutely fantastic. And she was saying, look, there's other ways to look at it as well. There's different ideologies to look at it as well. Don't look at it for your own ideology. Think about other people's positions in it. So I am always open to new ideas. And if someone comes up with a new idea that's the answer, well, good luck to you. I'm with you. But I just don't know a simple one.
No, you've explained that very well, and I think everybody, myself included, as the two white blokes chat to each other here, try and tease through the best response. It's difficult for us, but it's a way of encapsulating the difficulty with trying to deal with one nut job and respecting how black players and non-white players will feel on the pitch.
Exactly.
So regarding football's place in all this, that's a very interesting conversation at the moment, because there is no doubt across English society there is an emboldened category of people who are perfectly happy now to be on camera phones and on social media saying the most dreadful things to people who don't look like them and saying, well, you're not English, you need to get out of my country. We've seen that. And that is, it seems, gathering pace. And that's mm-hmm. judging from afar, you'll appreciate. So football's place in that. Of course, it is not unnatural for that growing aspect of society to be reflected in football. It is the people's game. But we are now risking some kind of precipice, I would put it to you, where we've seen it at the Manchester Derby, we're certainly seeing it at lower league games, where there's a danger that this just becomes so in the ether that it can be, it could quickly become almost a part of the fabric of the match day experience. And it will be not a last resort for people. It will become a commonly visited resort for idiots in the crowd to go to. That, for me, is the massive, massive, massive worry. We've talked, coming up, believe it or not, for maybe 7 years, I think, this March, most Monday evenings. And I would say we've talked more about racism at football in the last couple of months than maybe the previous six put together. So that precipice we're flirting with, to me, it feels real. Now, maybe that's sensationalist and recency bias, but it does feel like this is going to become a thing now. And I'm not sure if there's a runaway train or how we halt it or what we do.
Number one, 100% what you have to do is ban them for life, right? Mm. And then you take the legal possession. So you're not going to get the same people doing it all the time. When it becomes clear, if it becomes clear to these people that there's no two chances in this. It's a one strike and you're out, and you're out, and you're out forever. Maybe that has some sort of effect. I don't know if it is going to have an effect because you're beginning to see it. The cultural thing that's going on in the UK, this, you know, obviously the immigration thing that was a big part of the election, be it, you know, under the surface sometimes slightly, but sometimes not too far below the surface. The Brexit stuff that was going on here as well, that was definitely part of it as well. You mentioned the social media where you can say whatever you like and get away with it. People don't get it now. They think, oh, it's okay to say whatever I like. I have the rights to say whatever I like. Well, you ain't in our sphere of football. You ain't got that. So we'll keep on going. I don't know the answer to it. It hurts to say it sometimes. We've talked about it more now. Is it more prevalent now? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know. I can tell you it's been called out more now.
Yeah.
I can tell you that for sure.
That's the more hopeful interpretation of what we're seeing at the moment. That Rudiger goes over to Azpilicueta, who goes to Anthony Taylor. The announcements are played. Downing Street reacts. Maybe that was still happening 5 years ago. Just as much.
I think it was happening. I'm pretty sure it was happening. And if you ask any black players, they'll tell you it was happening. But we're calling it out now every single time. And I'm kind of happy we're calling it out now every single time. What I would love to see, if I had to ask anything of football to change just now, I would ask one thing, and it's not an easy thing to do. But I think it can be done. I think if the guy beside me shouts it now, I just point. Mm. I just say, it's him. Mm. And if you've got 7, 8, 9, 10 people around and say, it's him, stroke her, and we all point, I think it then becomes difficult. I think you get very, very rarely at that point in time you get these people doing that, because if you're not hiding in a crowd, because they are hiding in the crowd, aren't they?
Yeah.
If you're no longer hiding in the crowd, you're now getting pointed out. And I don't think there's anything against football fans getting together, be it through the FSA. Now, I'm not asking them to do it all, because the clubs are trying their best. The players have got involved in all sorts of campaigns. Most players will talk about it. All the managers will talk about it. Everyone within the game is trying to talk about it and still haven't got an answer. Well, do you know what? I'm not saying the fans are not doing the right thing yet. I'm just saying, do you know what? You could help this bit more. You could do that point and just say, it's you. Football fans many times over the years have found ways around this. Mm. I can remember a time when there was, a lot of violence in the grounds. There was fights and things. Man City fans, oddly enough, were one of the first ones that started. They started bringing inflatables to the game. You can't have a fight if you get a bunch of inflatables around you because everybody's laughing too much. Football fans actually could be part of this. Mm. And I would love the chance for them to do it. And it'd be great because, in the end, it's them. It's coming from there. That's where it's coming from.
That's a great point. Yeah, that's a great point. And I would still absolutely believe 99% of people are still very good and find this abhorrent. So I think what you've said is absolutely spot on. And maybe the campaigns should be focused on getting the fans to point the finger.
Yeah, and I'd love to do it. I am a fan. I am a football fan. I might say, give them 2 weeks ago, I was a football fan. I'm paid to go in and do it. I am a football fan. I would love to work with the FSA, the Football Supporters Association, and start that as some sort of campaign. In fact, you know what? I'm going to do it.
They asked.
I was rather stupidly, I think it was second or third year in a row, they had me as in the top five for Pundit of the Year again, right? So obviously that's a scam. There must be somebody in there that quite likes me, right? Because I'm not anywhere near one of the most well-known ones. I actually should have got back in touch with them and actually talked, instead of not bothering to turn up because I knew I wasn't going to win. I should have actually said, I'm going to get back in touch with you. So, do you know what?
No, do.
I'm going to do that and I'll get back to you.
That could be a very empowering thing. It could gather real momentum because the vast majority of people, you know, the UK is such an integrated society in so many ways. Their sons and daughters will bring home a partner from another race. And, you know, just the abhorrence I think most people feel towards it. There'd be such momentum behind that. I think that'd be a brilliant thing to lend your voice to. Of course, you're pundit of the year, by the way. What are you talking about?
Look at the date. Look at the time. This is when we started. Let's have a go.
No. As soon as you said that, actually, as you were saying your answer there, I thought, well, that's obviously, that is the solution. Fans calling each other out and taking a pride in calling other people out. Just one other thing to get your thoughts on, because you're very media savvy as much as anything. Dave Jones on Sky Sports is enduring the biggest pylon on Twitter in quite some time. At the moment, this came at the end of the show. Gary Neville was talking about the situation. Gary Neville had a couple of weeks ago mentioned Boris Johnson. This was the day after the leaders' debate, one of the leaders' debates, and he had referenced Boris Johnson's, I think it was dog whistling. I don't think he used that phrase, but that's what he was getting at, certainly. And so this was the second time he had brought up Johnson, and he threw Corbyn into the mix here as well. And Dave Jones responded in maybe not the greatest way, but we'll just play it for people to hear it and then get your thoughts on it all.
We have a racism problem in the Premier League in England, and the Premier League have got to stand up. They hide behind the FA, the Premier League, on this issue. They hide behind the FA, in my opinion. They push the disciplinary issues and other issues over to the FA. Yes, we heard the announcements at the end, but I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. We've just seen a general election in this country where both main parties and the leaders of both main parties are accused constantly over the last month of fueling racism and accepting racism within their parties. So if it's accepted in the highest office in the country, we're not talking about it at a micro level, we're talking about it at an absolute enormous level, the highest office in the country. And it's the same here today. We've seen an incident, to be fair, which we could call is down to one individual person. But it's a far bigger problem than that. I think there has to be something that happens quickly. And I think ultimately, I said on the thing, I think we maybe have to empower the players to walk off the pitch and stop the entertainment whilst it's happening. Because that's the only way in which I can see it happen. Because ultimately, I didn't walk off the pitch when Ashley was abused 15 years ago, and ultimately you might argue that, you know, it's now okay for me to sit here in my sort of ivory tower of a commentary box and suggest that, you know, players should walk off the pitch. But I think ultimately I would be ashamed of myself for not doing 15 years ago, and as I would be absolutely proud of players now to empower them to think, do something about it, take it into your own hands. The PFA have got to act, because ultimately the PFA are there to protect football players in this country, and football players in this country are receiving abuse whilst they're playing football and doing their jobs. That is unacceptable. So the PFA might have to take it into their own hands if the Premier League and FA, and stop pointing the finger towards the Bulgarian FA and the Spanish FA, because we have to deal with our own ship here.
I am compelled to say they are the opinions of you, Gary Neville, and not those of Sky Sports. That is my duty. But
do you not agree with it, Dave?
Well, whether I do or I don't is completely irrelevant.
That's fine.
I'm here to try and hold a balanced debate. What about what Gary says?
Well, that was balanced. I wasn't accusing anybody of racism, but it was pretty balanced. Okay.
Oof. And then for the next 24 hours, Dave Jones's life has been no fun. What was your interpretation, because this is key, of what Jones was trying to say there?
I wouldn't have a word against Jones. That you work in the media, you know, you have to be an honest middle person. If you're a pundit, inverted commas, you have to go in and have a position, an angle. Now, if you are, particularly if it's the BBC, but it's the same for Sky as well, you're supposed to be a central figure to get opinions in both, arguably, both sides of any argument. For Gary to drag him in there was a unfortunate and unnecessary. He may well think strongly along the same lines as Gary does, but to drag him into that, I think that was unfair. I wouldn't do that to anyone else. I would think that was unfair of them, but I agree generally with what Gary was saying, you know, and I would say that, and it's easy for me to say that, but I wouldn't even say to yourself, I mean, it's a wee bit easier. I don't know why it's easier, but it's slightly easier. I think you would say, yeah, I agree with him. Yeah. But over in the UK, with the kind of type of media we've got, and particularly BBC, as I say, which has to be completely neutral if you are anchoring it, you're trained not to give that position or that opinion. If you give a position or opinion on anything, generally, you run the risk of getting sacked.
Because if you listen back to it, so I watched it again today, and it was after he references Corbyn and Johnson that you hear Jones say, well, and Gary Neville keeps talking. Mm-hmm. And so quite a long period of time elapses as he finishes his point. Again, all of which is completely fair and spot on in pretty much every single way. But what Jones wanted to say was that Boris Johnson and Jeremy Corbyn would reject any accusations of racism, anti-Semitism or bigotry. That's what he was trying to say. It was about Johnson and Corbyn as the two individuals that Neville had referenced. And instead, he ends up doing just far too vague a way, you know, well, we just need to say they're your opinions, which isn't the best way of putting it. And nobody is saying there should be a balanced debate on the rights and wrongs of racism. David Jones doesn't think that racism is up for debate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but why drag that guy who's a central part of allowing the debate, allowing the discussion into it? Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's secondary. What is primary is probably what you're trying to say, what you're suggesting there, about having a political discussion, and those political people will come in and say, no, I don't, you know, Jeremy will come on and say, well, I'm not anti-Semitic, yeah, even though lots of people have said it. Johnson will say, well, I'm not a racist, even though I say things about pillboxes and things like that. Yeah. So they will have to be allowed to make their position. Yes, he wanted to say that. It's live television.
No, it's, you know, it's so tough. It's so tough. And like, because Neville actually was very careful. Neville said they had been accused of. So Neville was actually being factually correct in a very clever way. I mean, to his credit, he was thinking really well on live TV. He said they had been accused of racism or whatever exact word he used. But it's just such an accepted mechanic that Jones could have said, well, they're not here to defend themselves, so I have to say they would reject that. And that actually, perversely, allows rigorous debate and strong comment. But it just actually looked like Sky were just completely caught in the headlights. Maybe to some extent Sky were, you know. Maybe that's just, it's so far outside of their comfort zone. They are about selling.
Forget this. Why are you asking me? I should be asking you. Yeah. You're stuck in that position.
Yeah.
You've been putting in, and oddly enough, I think Irish media is different. I really do. I think every time I've talked to anyone in News Talk or, you know, further, you all have strong, knowledgeable understanding of every field I've ever talked to you about. But also, you have an opinion. I've heard you have opinions as well. How comfortable would you have been being put into that position yourself?
I think it would have been fine. I mean, we tend to get into tetchier territory. We do things like a Sunday paper review and end up in all sorts of weird and wonderful and tricky political conversations. So maybe we're a bit more practiced at it than somebody who's just in a TV studio thrown to clips and thrown to interviews. But I mean, his producers let him down as well. The simple advice there was, the only danger there was that Jeremy Corbyn and Boris Johnson, now they wouldn't, but they could potentially sue. They could say, look, there was no sense that we have rejected this accusation of racism or bigotry or anti-Semitism put forward on our behalf in our absence. So that's all Jones needed to say. And his choice of words saying, you know, I'm just trying to have a balanced debate, particularly when so long had elapsed in Neville's answer when he first referenced Corbyn and Jones and Johnson. People had almost forgotten that aspect, I think. And so there's now just literally a gazillion people saying to Dave Jones, what do you mean a balanced debate on racism? So I think that's, and ultimately you used the phrase live TV, but they still botched it as well.
Yeah, and that's the danger of any live broadcast you do. I mean, it happens. I've lived in it myself. There's times where I put things many times across that I thought, oh, could I put that much better? But, you know, you don't always. And the sadness of, and where we are in the world just now, is people will take a binary position on it. So they'll say, oh, he must be a racist maybe for saying that. Well, he's not. He's actually seen it from a slightly different position. I'm kind of comfortable where I come from most of the time. But some of the time you're taken out of context, and I'm aware that that will happen to some of us all the time, and he will feel that he was slightly taken out of context. But I just feel actually quite sorry for him. More than anything else, I feel sorry for him. I'm actually really impressed with Gary.
Really good, yeah. It was a brilliant contribution. And actually, isn't it such a pity that, you know, so say, and this is generalising a touch, which is not the best thing to do in light of this conversation, but there's probably a sizable proportion of people who have no interest in politics, and maybe this, you know, through football is one of their main ways they're exposed to some kind of debate on this issue. And like, Graeme Souness is a phenomenal footballer. Ashley Cole is a phenomenal footballer. But like, I mean, that is a hell of a platform to give those guys on this issue. And not everybody who's played professional sports is equipped to preach to the masses. I wouldn't like to be in that position either. In a perfect world, you'd have professors of sociology or people who work at the coalface of it all to give a sense of things.
Not in the UK, just now. They don't like specialists anymore.
No experts. But you know, that's the other thing. If you're, geez, I was just thinking to presenter, like I'm turning to Souness from Neville. I'm not sure, where am I going here half the time?
It's a tricky one. I've been on shows before where I've got two other players beside me and something very tricky comes up, which is a really complex issue that you're expected to be able to understand the intricacies of it, and it's dynamite if you get it wrong.
Yeah.
They always turn to me. Oh, cheers, lads. Thanks very much. What about M2 there?
I hate to break it to you. Often with a tricky issue on a Monday, I say, it's all right, Nevin's on, it's fine.
We don't always get it right, but what you do is have an understanding of the position and always bring it back to what is the important position. The important position is we don't lose where we're coming from here. We're trying to find an answer for this. Mm. We're trying to find an answer for it as a very, well, not only an answer, we're trying to find the reasons why it is where it is just now. Now, it takes a lot, I think, because if it was a simple answer, we'd have found it by now. If we saw the reasons why this was all coming up, we could have maybe headed off at the past. But it's not been easy to see why the changes have happened and how we go and adapt to it. That's the way the world is just now. And I look at, you know, I talk to people all the time, and I'm open to ideas. And that's one of the things maybe that I'd never want to be knee-jerk, because it's too easy. It's far too easy. You can just go on your computer, you can be knee-jerk and shout and ball, and it's the easiest thing in the world. And that's why I don't jump down those areas, because I've been in too many different jobs where I know what are the unintended consequences. And it's to people that are hurt by unintended consequences, and I never forget that. So the people, I remember talking to a cabinet minister under Thatcher's government. I remember talking to one of them, and then talking to him 15 years later, to which he then said, yeah, we got that wrong. We were blaming all the football fans for that when it wasn't. They weren't all thugs. They shouldn't have all been rounded up and beaten by truncheons. And I'm thinking, yeah, but they all were.
Yeah.
But you're not getting lumped into that. The football fans had to suffer at a time because of that nonsense.
Yeah.
And you didn't suffer the consequences. They did. I'm always in the camp of, look, who's going to suffer these consequences? Right, I might want to make sure that none of the black players do. I want to make sure that none of the players do. I want to make sure that the other 69,999 fans aren't suffering unexpected and undeserved consequences either. So that's why I'm trying to find, which is sometimes a more nuanced answer to it. But if it, as I say, if Gary's right and it becomes a thing where people start walking off all the time, then that becomes, you know, that's how we find a way around it. And then it all stops. It's not absolutely convinced those nutters are going to stop from that.
No. To finish on something completely incidental then, as we sign off for the Christmas, it's barely even a shock now when Manchester United lose to a lesser team, but they did at Vicarage Road, and Nigel Pearson seemed to get a performance out of Watford. Just one kind of smaller point within that. I now have gone from looking at David De Gea and seeing the best goalkeeper in the world to just feeling jittery and feeling like something is close to, the case, but close to being permanently broken and a touch fragile about David De Gea now. I don't know how it's quite happened, but that's what I see, or that's instinctively how I feel when I look at him in a goal now.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as well, and why it happens to certain goalkeepers. There's some keepers that have periods in their career where they look, you know, if the ball's crossed in, you think, you just look away because you know they're going to catch it. You know, you just look away.
Mm.
And, you know, they go for, I remember watching Petr Cech for years, thinking, the ball's getting lumped in there, right? Okay, who's on the break now?
Yeah.
I'm not even bothered to watch him because he's going to get it right. And then five or 6 years later, then he started missing a couple or missed time in a couple. And you think, well, what happened there?
Mm.
You know, did you lose confidence? Did you just get a bit older? Are they just like any other footballer? you hit a peak and then you fall off again. Mm. And there was long periods of time there with De Gea. Nothing came off him. Everything stuck. His timing, his eye coordination, everything's perfect. But it's not now. And I would love to be able to tell you. Yeah. This is the only time I usually back into somebody else's. See, we goalkeepers always want to ask a goalkeeper, and I always go and ask goalkeepers about it. Mm. And I remember used to play for Chelsea. One of the ex-Chelsea goalkeepers, they didn't get many games. Australian guy, name's gone for me for a moment.
Mark Bosnich.
No, more recent than that. We'll come back to me anyway. So he was saying to me, what sometimes happens is, you get an injury. So you get up to go and catch a ball and someone comes in, hits you, and you go down and you land badly.
Yeah.
Next time you go up, whatever your mind tells you, you still think you're not thinking, oh, I hope I don't hurt myself. Your brain is instilled in there.
Yes.
I could get that hit. So you're not only thinking of one thing now. You've actually got two things in your mind now, and it changes you. And sometimes it's not even a big injury or a big thing that happened. It was something weird that happened. And then suddenly your body looks at it completely and utterly differently. And I've kind of sometimes, I remember a goalkeeper, I once worked under a guy called Eddie Nedvedsky at Chelsea, never made any mistakes. It was unbelievable. He was the second best, Welsh goalkeeper, i.e. Neville Southall was around at the time. But he was utterly brilliant week after week. And then he'd done a cruciate injury. And when he came back, he was completely different at those crosses. He angled himself differently. Mm. And it was really strange. It was a real shame, was he? His career was ended by in the end. But just that one wee thing can change goalkeepers, because think of what we look at the ball, we look at them and think, oh, just go and catch the ball.
Yeah.
Seven other players are running. It's all these other things. They've got other things. And it may well be that something else has happened with him that's changed it. Or else, he might just be going through a bad time. Or else he's had his brilliant time at the top. I mean, how many people stay at the top? We think of the ones that stay at the top for an entire career. How many really stay that longer than 5 or 6 years? Very, very pinnacle of their ability.
Yeah, well, it's an amazing situation at the moment. Maybe he'll talk about it at some stage in a couple of years' time. Mark Schwarzer, by the way, we reckon.
Is the man.
There you go.
I hate that because I meet him every 2 or 3 weeks. We always seem to be at the same games. I spent a whole bunch of time over in France with him for the Women's World Cup as well. And he talks brilliantly on football generally, but in goalkeeping especially.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. Listen, thanks so much. Another year done and dusted, so we'll see you in the new year. Thanks a million, Pat. Have a great Christmas.
And you too, and to everyone listening.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as spending a 9-month loan spell at Preston North End.